Good afternoon. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to An Older Voice, an Audio Journal production presenting articles of interest for the senior community. In our program today, I will bring you articles from the Worcester Telegram and Gazette and the AARP publications. This is Eileen reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. Excuse me. The Senior Scoop has been released online. However, next week is our Monday to read the entire edition. But I am going to run through and give you a couple of heads up of programs that will occur the end of this week and next week. So if you need to register, you will have enough of warning to know. On Tuesday, May 5th, from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., the program, How I-290 Reshaped a Neighborhood and What We Can Do Now, Coffee and History. Hear from local historians, view historic images, and join community conversation. Before there was a highway, there was a neighborhood. Next, we have Crafts with Maureen Carlos that occurs on Tuesday, May 6th. From 10 to 11:30, there is a $5 fee, and the number to call to register is 508-799-1232. The project is jewelry making. On Wednesday, May 6th, from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., the Retired Friends Club of the Greendale Inc. Chorus enjoy Broadway and sing-alongs, patriotic songs, and familiar hymns. Please join us. And the Outdoor Walking Club kickoff is Thursday, May 7th, from 9 to 10 a.m. Jenny Lynch leads the group in a quick stretch. Then the walk at Gaskill Field begins. Our goals are friendship, fun, and staying healthy by walking. T-shirts available for new walkers only. Sign up for one at the front desk. Prizes and incentives given. The more you walk, the more you earn. And on Friday, May 1, which is this week, from 9 to 4, get fitted for diabetic shoes. Call for an appointment at 617-787-8779. That's the diabetic shoes, and it's 617-787-8779 for an appointment. And from Sunday's paper, the ACT section, the front page, A Choral Quilt of America, and making a selection of pieces to perform in honor of 250 years of American music for the country's semi-quincentennial Reagan G. Paris, music director of the Salisbury Singers, had a wonderful but vast plethora of options. So Paris enlisted the help of the singers in choosing the program for the concert, Quilting the American Story, a choral celebration, which will be performed this Sunday, May 3rd, in All Saints Episcopal Church. Within a core lineup of arrangements for a chorus of 45 voices who will be singing on May 3, Paris has put together a concert that also features individual vocalists, duets, barbershop-style quintets, and small ensembles within the Salisbury Singers, who will be singing a range of music ranging from early American favorites to contemporary classics. The pieces had to be auditioned by the singers in front of Paris to be selected. "I wanted to give autonomy to our choir members," he said. "When I asked people to audition, I was surprised how many people wanted to audition for it." Paris was also mindful that there are going to be a number of 250th anniversary performances by singing groups this year, so he was looking for something a little different. Quilting the American Story is a cabaret or variety-style concert in an intimate setting that will also include food and refreshments. I think we're going to see a lot of this summer. That's great, but I think the market is going to be saturated. For the Salisbury Singers concert, there will be the full chorus, but also different smaller acts. It's a more immersive experience than usual. The concert won't be in the Sanctuary of All Saints, but in a smaller hall. It will enable us to perform in a different way. The core repertoire for the full chorus that Paris has chosen includes arrangements of the Star Spangled Banner and the American spiritual, "My Soul's Been Anchored in the Lord." The hymn "Amazing Grace" is arranged by the late American choral composer Edlo Jeske and the timeless haunting song "Shenandoah." "It's such a beautiful piece," Paris said of Shenandoah. "If there had been a Billboard chart in the 1800s, it would have been number one for 100 years," he said. Songs performed by the singers as soloists or in small combinations will include "When Johnny Comes Marching Home" from the Civil War era, "Summertime" from George Gershwin's Porky and Bess, "Somewhere Over the Rainbow" from The Wizard of Oz, "Moon River," Bonnie Raitt's "I Can't Make You Love Me," John Denver's "Take Me Home, Country Roads," and "Be Our Guest" from Beauty and the Beast. "It's a wide range, and everyone can be part of the concert and enjoy it," Paris said. "I wanted to give them," the singers, "a choice to select the music that they feel best suits their voice. As a choir director, I'm usually the one that's choosing and selecting the repertoire. To hear their preferences, it's an opportunity to learn more about them, and I love that. Having an audition gave everyone a chance to perform, and they seem to really like it." Some of the numbers will be in abbreviated form, as Paris wants the concert to come in at about an hour and 10 minutes without an intermission, which I think is good time for concert, he said. He and other choral concert programmers might not have necessarily shared that option pre-COVID-19 pandemic. But what's considered the ideal duration of a concert is now shorter, Paris noted. Pre-pandemic, Paris led choruses and choral groups in performances that were sometimes 2 hours plus. It used to be notorious for marathon concerts. Now times and the performance times have changed. Now it's really interesting. Audiences and performers like them shorter. It creates a really enjoyable experience for everyone who wants to attend. The worst thing is, if they're looking at the clock, I realize that the shorter concerts are far more enjoyable. Quilting the American Story is the final concert of the 2025-26 season for the Salisbury Singers, and concludes Paris's second successful season as its music director. It just flew by, he said. Salisbury Singers is a community chorus founded in 1973 by the late Malama Robbins Collingsworth, a passionate and accomplished musician and music educator who dedicated her life to enriching the cultural landscape of Worcester. The chorus, named after one of Worcester's most historically prominent families, quickly established itself as a significant cultural institution in central Massachusetts. Most recently, Bradford D. Dumont had been Salisbury Singers' music director from 2020 to 2022, and artistic director from 2022 to 2024, following a long and successful tenure by Michelle Graveline. Dumont left to take a full-time position as assistant professor and director of choral arrangements at Bridgewater State University. Christian Imperio is collaborative pianist. Paris, who lives in Brookfield with his wife and three children, is also artistic director of Many Voices, Mechanics Hall's Youth Singers, a free, inclusive choral program for Worcester County students in grades 4 to 8. He is an associate professor at Berklee College of Music in Boston and has directed choral performance tours across the United States and abroad, and is an active advocate for choral music education. The Salisbury Singers 2025-26 season has also included Songs of Solstice in November and Be the Light in April, both at All Saints, and participating in the annual Holiday Pops concert with the Massachusetts Symphony Orchestra and in Worcester's Bach Birthday Bash Cantatathlon, both in Mechanics Hall for Be the Light. Salisbury Singers was joined by the Music Education Concert Choir from Berklee School of Music. The program included Elaine Hagenberg's Illuminaire, which celebrates the power of light and beauty in overcoming adversity. Audiences have been seeing the light. We had record attendance in the 2025-26 season, Paris said. The Salisbury Singers has between 45 to 60 singers, depending on the concert, 45 for Quilting the American Story, with some new members this season. I think with professional choirs and community choirs like ours, it's multi-generational and much different than teaching a college choir, and with that, a lot of personalities, Paris said. Times have also changed with the way conductors lead choirs, community choirs in particular. I'm really up to date on choral pedagogy. Singers are less likely to respond to overly assertive conductors. In the past, conductors could be very harsh, and the choir and singers would just absorb the feedback. That's no longer how they respond, Paris said. With a community choir, I have to balance assertiveness with kindness. I'm very good at delivering feedback in a way that the choir can laugh, but they get it done. And I do it in a humorous manner, and they don't feel I'm talking at them. Patience is also a good quality to have with a good group like Many Voices. I love them both, Paris said, of Many Voices and the Salisbury Singers. All Saints has become the main base for the Salisbury Singers, as the place where it rehearses once a week and puts on several concerts during its seasons. It's a beautiful location. The staff there are very, very nice, and the organ is one of the best in Massachusetts. The 2026-27 season is already in the works as Paris gets ready to submit it to the Salisbury Singers Board for approval. Next season, we're looking for ways to engage the community and find ways to do more collaborative projects, he said.
Are you a senior who is dealing with vision loss? Would you like to learn about advocacy efforts on behalf of seniors who are blind? And about support calls, where you can talk with other seniors who are also dealing with vision loss? If so, join us, the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. To learn more, visit our website, www.aavl-blind-seniors.org.
Hello, listeners. Would you like to hear news from Holden, Paxton, Princeton, Rutland, and Sterling that you're not likely to hear on commercial television and radio? Tune in to Audio Journal every Friday at 7 a.m. and again at 9 a.m. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
And from the Sunday Telegram, the ACT section again, under Woo Science, a team is to put the moon in the spotlight. Give Worcester credit. Around the time I first got my driver's license, I had a dream. I was driving along a road at night when a nearly full moon appeared and nestled in the sky ahead. Pockmarked with craters, it detached itself from its nocturnal perch and began spinning as it moved downward until it found itself in the car and in my hands. I sense that this dream symbolized both the anticipation and anxiety that comes with young adulthood. I think of it now, taking in the wonders of the Artemis II mission, which launched on April 1 from the Kennedy Space Center, and during which Orion's four-member crew spent 10 days circumnavigating the moon, getting as close as 4,070 feet of the lunar surface. The dream I had resonates because this mission has brought home with it not only images, videos, and space travelers' tales, but the paradox that this is the moon. It's a cold place with no atmosphere, and its jagged surface tells of random objects that have slammed against it. Strange events have taken place there, including a still-debated incident witnessed June 18, 1178, by the monks of Canterbury in England. The abbot, Gervais of Canterbury, who also recorded the assassination of Thomas Becket, is considered a generally reliable source of events of the times. Gervais wrote, "This year on the 18th of June, when the moon slim crescent first became visible, a marvelous phenomena was seen by several men who were watching it. Suddenly, the upper horn of the crescent was split in two. From the midpoint of the division, a flaming torch sprang up, spewing out over a considerable distance, fire, hot coals, and sparks. The body of the moon, which was below, writhed with a wounded snake. This happened a dozen times or more, and when the moon returned to normal, the whole crescent took on a blackish appearance. For as long as we humans have been looking up the moon, we have, like Abbot Gervais, tried to understand it objectively. And at the same time, we assigned values all too human, a blur of science and poetry, all part of our ancestral desire to control our environment, vanquish our fears, and improve our odds for survival. For many, our Team Is Two remains a thrill of a lifetime. I think what I found most ecstatic, it kind of reminded me 50-plus years ago watching the moon landing, said Charles Slatkin. By now, you might be familiar with Slatkin as the lead person behind much of the centennial celebrations of Robert Goddard, Worcester native son, who launched the first liquid-fuel rocket on his aunt's farm, March 16, 1926. Slatkin thought the city should throw a party and celebrations, including music, theater, and exhibits, illuminated Goddard's life and his legacy. After all, Goddard got us all thinking of the possibility of going to the moon, even if it made him a figure of fun in the press at time. Clearly not everyone laughed. Slatkin is founder of the Wonder Mission and owner of the Robert and Esther Goddard House in Worcester. Slatkin doesn't only want to promote the city's connection to Goddard and space travel. Slatkin wants to make science and a zest for discovery as accessible as possible. Recalling the Apollo 2 moon landing of July 16, 1969, Slatkin said, "The breathtaking images from that mission don't hold up compared to the ones from A Team Is Two, with more than five decades of advancement in photography and technology. I got a lot of vicarious pleasure watching the next generation, my grandson five, watching his big space mission," Slatkin said. "I think of these new images, especially of Earth from a distance. I think of these new images, especially of Earth from a distance, really believable images of Earth, and how it really stands out, having that perspective of Earth that we don't get when SpaceX launches. Maybe space travelers can escape the pull of gravity, but the moon, it seems, can't escape the pull of Worcester." Not only did a miniature book by Goddard travel with the Apollo 2 mission, but the suits worn by the crew of A Team Is Two and others were designed here in Worcester by David Clark Company. So you see, if you live in Worcester and really want to get to the moon, consider yourself practically there. Something in our nature wants to believe that everything we see is tapped into us and what we're all about. The moon can't possibly just be a random, shiny object. In our collective hopes, fears, and folklore, we've connected it to mythical creatures such as the werewolf. The very name Atemis comes from a Greek goddess, and is only one example of our impulse to give the moon a personality, an organic, conscious sense of being. I think people have a special relationship with the moon because it's such a presence in the sky. The sun is a little different. We can't look at it. It's hard to see the sun, said Melanie Meadows, science communicator, astronomy educator, and representative of the Aldridge Astronomical Society. "When I see the moon in the sky, it's almost like when people see cows from their car and have to announce it. I'm like, moon? I think it's one of the most beautiful sights in the sky, with or without a telescope." Meadows said, "I don't think the A Team Is Two mission will really change people's perception of the moon, however mystical their beliefs might be. But if they really believe the moon affects their lives, I think they will continue to feel that way. But I also think that future missions might change that, Once we start really having a presence on the moon, especially if we can see artificial lights on the moon from Earth. Indeed, we still hold the moon fiercely to us, a true traveling companion through the mystery of night. We want to believe that phenomena, such as the so-called blood moon, which is really part of the moon's relationship to sunlight and holds a portent which should not be ignored. And then there's this disquieting idea. The moon, by many estimations, is actually pulling away from Earth's gravity at the speed of roughly an inch and a half a year. Even if you're not invested in astrology, that's a discomforting thought. It makes sense within our understanding of an expanding universe, but not within our very human idea of a goddess who makes herself known to us through this beautiful, luminous being in the darkness. Perhaps, as Midora said, the moon that inspires us will persist. As Jack Kerouac said to his poem song with Steve Allen, the moon, her majesty.
Have you listened to one of Audio Journal's most popular shows, Talking Topics, with host Bill Ruggiero? You can catch it on the second weekend of each month, airing Saturday at 3 p.m. and again on Sunday at 6 p.m. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal. Have you listened to one of Audio Journal's most popular shows, Talking Topics, with host Bill Ruggiero? You can catch it on the second weekend of each month, airing Saturday at 3 p.m. and again on Sunday at 6 p.m. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
Our next article comes from the Sunday Telegram of April 19. Leominster honors the plastic lawn flamingo. Drive through any suburban neighborhood in the United States, and you're bound to spot at least one pink flamingo. But for Leominster, the lawn ornament created within the city limits is more than just decoration, but a symbol of community. I just have this thing about rodents, said Leominster Mayor Dean Mazzarella ahead of this past Groundhog Day. I just thought this is terrible. Everyone is just waiting for a rodent to come out of a hole. So I thought, well, no one has ever had anything bad to say about flamingos. Since 2007, Mazzarella and the city of Leominster have thrown their own version of the holiday, using a quintessential symbol of the community, the plastic pink flamingo. Created in 1957 by Don Featherstone, the lawn ornament is now recognizable around the world, decorating lawns from Leominster to Lima, Peru. Mazzarella himself has quite the collection, including the classic pink, blue, and even the skeleton version in honor of Halloween. Featherstone was born in Worcester in 1936 and took a job within the growing plastic industry in Leominster after graduating from the School of the Worcester Art Museum. Leominster bills itself as the plastics capital of the world, with household names like Tupperware and the plastic comb emerging from the city limits. With the invention of injection molding, the plastic industry seemingly transformed overnight, as companies were then able to mass-produce plastic items. One of these companies, Union Products, employed Featherstone and operated in Leominster from 1946 through 2006, known for its 3D plastic animals, Christmas ornaments, and Halloween decorations, it only made sense that the genius of the plastic pink flamingo would come from within its walls. In a world where there were not robots or automation, Union Products was very much on the frontier. They were incredibly efficient, Mazzarella said. And Don, well, he was very creative in the art world, and it was his flamingo that caught everyone's attention. As for Featherstone, it is rumored he studied the pages of National Geographic to design the flamingo as if he'd never seen one in the wild. The plastic birds were always sold in pairs, first appearing in the Sears catalog for just $276 to a box. The design was so popular that in 1987, the company launched Featherstone Originals, included a mold of Featherstone's signature to set it apart from other versions of the bird. As their popularity migrated, so did a distaste for the plastic, now parading across American lawns. Some began to see it as a cheap or tacky, and some homeowners' associations began banning the decor. Both Featherstone and his wife, Nancy, were said to have embraced the title of tacky and celebrated despite what others thought. In 1996, Featherstone was awarded an IG Nobel Prize for art for his flamingo design. He and Nancy showed up at the ceremony wearing matching outfits, all handmade by Nancy herself, something the couple did for at least 35 years. I knew him, and he was quite an interesting character, Mazzarella said. It really was fun to talk to him about anything at any time. The pair also had their own flock of 57 in the backyard, which were often stolen by neighborhood college kids. Other cities have tried to claim the pink flamingo as their own. In 2009, Madison, Wisconsin named the plastic pink flamingo the official bird of the city. Its obsession with the bird comes from a legendary prank that took place in the fall of 1979, when more than 1,000 flamingos were put on the lawn of the University of Wisconsin. Hollywood has also welcomed the pink flamingo, most recently in the 2011 Disney animated film The Romeo and Juliet. So there was this movie premiere, and of course I went, Mazzarella said. And right before the movie started, I tried to leave, but Don stopped me and asked if I was coming back. I came back and sat through the entire film. I honestly had no clue what I was about to watch, but I'm so glad I stayed. Mazzarella said the film has become one of his favorites, and its nod to Featherstone, a pink flamingo, is well done. Back in Leominster on Monday, February 2nd, the sun had just appeared over the nearby building when the pair of plastic flamingos failed to see their shadows, predicting an early spring. We have a him and a her now, Mazzarella said, adding the pair have really been wrong. Filming a live stream, Mazzarella made the most of the February 2nd holiday, entertaining viewers as far away as Florida, once again repeating his disdain for rodents. Meantime, Miss G, the official Massachusetts state groundhog, residing at the Mass Audubon Drumlin Farm Wildlife Sanctuary in Lincoln, saw her shadow and predicted 6 more weeks of winter. In Pennsylvania, Punxsutawney Phil predicted the same. It isn't just February when Leominster celebrates the pink plastic flamingo, but again with Flamingo Day celebrating in June, once again at Monument Square. Featherstone died in 2015 at 79, and he is buried alongside plastic pink flamingos within a family plot in South Berlin Cemetery. For those looking for authentic Featherstone flamingos, the Johnny Appleseed rest stop on Route 2 carries both pink and blue sets, as well as seasonal skeletal flamingos during the spooky season.
Are you a Worcester Regional Transit Authority paratransit rider from Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westboro, or West Boylston? Did you know that you no longer have to call customer service to book your trips? You can now take advantage of our new online reservation system and book your trips online at any time. Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to set up your online account to begin scheduling your trips. Please note the online reservation system is an additional option for your convenience. You can still call customer service to book your trips.
And I found another article that I thought was interesting. The nickel costs more to produce than it's worth. Last year, the United States Mint pressed the last penny. Penny preservationists warned that the death of the 1 cent coin might see dire consequences: coin shortages at checkout counters, confusion over how to pay bills not ending in zero or five, and the higher prices as retailers began rounding everything up. Yet, apart from scattered penny shortages, American society appears to have survived the loss of its least valuable coin. Is the nickel next? President Donald Trump killed the penny because the government lost money every time it pressed one. Nickels are money losers, too. In fact, nickels are bigger losers. The Mint spent $3.69 making every penny in 2024. For every nickel, the government spent $13.78, a loss of nearly 9 cents per coin. Add it up, and the government lost about $18 million minting pennies in 2024. On the nickel, the Mint lost $85 million. The argument for getting rid of the nickel is that it costs more to produce, quite a bit more, actually, than its face value, said David Smith, an economist at the Pepperdine University. Nickels cost more to make because they are larger than pennies and made of costlier stuff. 75% copper and 25% nickel. Pennies look like copper, but were actually made mostly of zinc. With the penny gone, coin experts reason consumers and shopkeepers will lean more heavily on the nickel, and the Mint will probably end up making more of them, and the losses will mount. The Treasury pressed only 113 million nickels in 2024, but minted 3.2 billion pennies. Many Americans regard both nickels and pennies as more nuisance than currency. The typical household is sitting on $60 to $90 in the neglected coins, enough to fill one or two pint-sized beer mugs, according to the Federal Reserve. Americans throw away millions of dollars in coins every year, literally treating them like trash. The death of the penny leaves the nickel as the least valuable coin. Inflation erodes the coin's buying power every year. A stamp hasn't cost a nickel since 1968. Excuse me. One unknown following the death of the penny lay in how retailers might handle the math of rounding off cash transactions. Would they round down, saving customers a few cents, or round up, earning themselves a few cents? A Common Sense Act introduced by a bipartisan group of lawmakers in 2025 would round cash transactions to the nearest 5 cents. That bill hasn't progressed, but some states are pursuing rounding laws on their own. If the nickel were nixed, the rounding debate would likely rise anew. Let's say something costs $4.91, and you can only pay $5. That's a difference of 9 cents, so that is a lot of money if you add it up. Some observers foresee the nickel's ultimate demise, given the steady march of inflation and the gradual erosion of purchasing power in a 5 cent coin.
This is a public service announcement from the Massachusetts Association for the Blind. The Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired provides assistive technology training for persons with visual impairments. If you or a family member are interested in receiving one-on-one specialized training, please contact 617-991-7073 or email atcenter@mabcommunity.org.
Next, from the AARP bulletin, under your health, you've got some nerve. Stimulating the vagus nerve may be the answer for chronic pain, heart disease, depression, and more. Dawn Steiner, 59, had suffered with rheumatoid arthritis for 13 years. At best, a daily cocktail of medications kept her pain level at around a 4 or 5 out of 10. On bad days, it was more like a 7. And there were lots of bad days. But taking part in a clinical trial using vagus nerve stimulation, VNS, changed all of that. A small pulse generating device about the size of a jelly bean was surgically implanted under her skin on the left side of her neck. The pulse generator wraps around her vagus nerve, the body's longest cranial nerve. My goodness, all these allergies. Please forgive me. But the vagus is the body's longest cranial nerve, which runs from the brain stem down through the neck on both sides of the body. The vagus nerve relays information between vital organs, including the heart, lungs, liver, pancreas, spleen, stomach, small intestines, and colon, and the brain for 1 minute each day. The small device in Steiner's neck releases an electrical pulse that travels through the vagus nerve to her brain. The device activates what we call the inflammatory reflex, which signals the vagus nerve to slow down inflammation, said the neurosurgeon, Dr. Kevin Tracy, president and CEO of Norwell Health, Feinstein Institute for Medical Research. Although the VNS can't undo existing damage, it can reduce inflammation so significantly that pain and future damage can be prevented. Sure enough, within a week, Steiner felt some relief, and over the next few weeks, her pain subsided considerably. 2.5 years later, with the VNS device still implanted, the New York speech pathologist experiences a pain level of 1 on most days. It's very manageable, she says. Electrical stimulation of the nerve, which is already used to treat some cases of epilepsy, may also have the potential to treat a range of conditions, including lupus, PTSD, inflammatory bowel disease, fibromyalgia, and cardiac issues. In July, the Drug and Food Administration approved an implantable set point system, the first vagus nerve device for treating RA, which was developed based on research conducted by Tracy and his team. And also last year, a study in the journal Brain Stimulation confirmed the efficiency of the VNS to manage treatment-resistant depression, paving the way for health coverage by insurance companies. We will see VNS explode on the scene in the next 5 years, and it's an exciting time, said the director of genetics of auditory and visual perception and plasticity at the University of Florida. An awareness of the vagus nerve has also struck a nerve, no pun intended, among wellness influencers who tout the benefits of everything from non-invasive VNS devices sold online to nerve-stimulating cold plunges, probiotics, and even humming. Researchers now know that VNS improves vagal tone, and the greater your vagal tone, the more active the nerve. A higher functioning vagus nerve is key to regulating heart rate and blood pressure, controlling the release of digestive enzymes and gastric acid, and helping move food through the digestive tract. These signals can turn on and off the body's production of inflammation, the hallmark symptom of RA and a contributing factor to many other diseases, including gastrointestinal problems such as acid reflux and irritable bowel syndrome, and neurodegenerative conditions like Alzheimer's. Tracy calls this two-way communication the inflammatory reflex. In each side of the nerve is 100,000 fibers, and each and every fiber has been programmed over millions of years to do a specific job. While Tracy concedes the VNS doesn't work for everyone, it can be an effective and less expensive alternative to using medication to treat many conditions, including stroke rehabilitation. When VNS won't cure a stroke, it can help many patients recover independence in everyday tasks such as feeding themselves. You apply half-second bursts of VNS at the precise moment in physical therapy when patients are trying movements like reaching or grasping to help retrain their brain circuitry, helping them regain use of their limbs. Spinal cord injuries. Last year, scientists demonstrated that VNS, coupled with progressive individualized rehab over 12 weeks, can lead to improvement for partial spinal cord injuries. This approach produced improvements in arm and hand function and is on track for FDA approval. And then it's used for migraines. A clinical trial in 2018 showed that VNS decreased the level of migraine pain at 30 to 60 minutes after using the device. The following year, VNS was approved for the prevention of cluster headaches as well. And it's a remedy for cognitive issues. High vagal tone has been linked to better cognitive performance, especially decision-making and self-regulation. It also helps reduce heart rate and muscle tension and promotes relaxation. Conversely, low vagal tone is associated with heightened stress and a reduced ability to cope with cognitive challenges. Although more study is needed, one pilot investigation of the effect of the VNS on cognition in 10 patients with Alzheimer's disease showed promise, with stability or improvement in cognitive performance noted in some of the patients over 6 months of treatment. VNS has been FDA approved for treatment resistant depression, which often causes memory issues in older patients. A lot of treatment transientially help with treatment resistant major depression, but once you stop delivering, the patient slides back into depression within months to a year, said Dr. Charles Conway, a professor of psychiatry at the Washington University of Medicine. But vagal nerve stimulation is different. If you're responding well to VNS, there's a good chance you will maintain that response over time. I have patients who have benefited from 5, 10, 15, and more years. A 2026 study conducted by Conway and others demonstrated that approximately 80% of patients with markedly treatment-resistant depression who responded to VNS have 1 year showed sustained benefits at the 2-year mark. This is just the tip of the iceberg, says Tracy. We're going to see new trials in multiple sclerosis, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular diseases, and many will make their way into clinical settings. The vagus nerve is like the strings on 100,000 violins. Each of these strings carries a specific note, but together they make a beautiful symphony.
Listen to Audio Journal on your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or, hey Google, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn.
And we have asked Dr. Adam, can I strengthen my brain later in life? Dr. Adam says, our brain can form new connections and even grow new cells throughout our lives with the right connections. What we do every day can change our brain's trajectory. Here are 5 exercises to focus on. Even light activity counts: walking, dancing, swimming, gardening, tai chi. Whatever keeps you moving improves blood flow, lowers inflammation, and strengthens the same vascular network that keeps your kidneys and brain alive. Just 150 minutes a week of moderate activity can mean measurably improve your brain performance. That's just over 20 minutes a day. Sleep. This is essential for memory and the removal of metabolic waste from your brain. Ideally, you should be getting between 7 and 9 hours of shut-eye every night. Without it, you won't be giving your brain enough time to clean and organize itself. Curiosity. Research shows that lifelong learning project connections. So take a class, learn a new language, try painting or playing music. These challenges engage neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to rewire and strengthen itself. Connections. Staying engaged with friends in your community buffers against loneliness, depression, and the brain decline that can follow. And then there was the question of, is sleep apnea serious? Dr. Adams says there are 2 types of sleep apnea. Obstructive sleep apnea, the more common one, occurs when the muscles in your throat relax during sleep, narrowing or blocking your airway. and oxygen levels drop, your brain wakes you just enough to gasp a snort, and then the cycle repeats, sometimes dozens or even 100 times a night. Central sleep apnea is less common and involves your brain failing to send proper signals to the muscles that control breathing, and some people have a mix of both. Sleep apnea can be very serious if untreated, but here's the good news. It's highly treatable, and a diagnosis is easier than ever. The gold standard remains a sleep study performed overnight in a lab where your brain waves, oxygen, and breathing are monitored. There are also at-home tests. An effective treatment is the continuous CPAP machine, which delivers a continuous stream of air through a mask over the nose and mouth. Other options include dental appliances that reposition your jaw, positional therapy, sleeping on your side, for example, weight loss medications, and lifestyle changes such as losing weight, exercising, and avoiding alcohol before bed. For patients who cannot tolerate CPAP treatment, an implantable device that prevents air obstruction is another option.
Did you know ADA paratransit riders in Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westboro, and West Boylston now have the option to schedule trips through the Worcester Regional Transit Authority's new online reservation system. Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to begin scheduling your trip online.
This is Bird Note. Ornithologist and poet J. Drew Lanham often writes about his experience as a black man in the outdoors, both the joy of being in nature and the racism he faces in the field. Sometimes that's led him to bird in places that others might overlook. And one time, looking for sparrows inspired a poem celebrating these little brown birds.
Sparrow envy. Were I the sparrow, brown-backed, skittish, and small, I would find haven in thorniest thickets, search far and wide for fields lain fallow, treasure the unkempt, worship the unmown, covet the weed-strewn row. I would slink between sedges, chip unseen from brambles, skulk deep within hedges, and desire the ditches grown wild. I would find great joy in the mist-sodden morning, sing humble pleas from the highest weeds, and plead for the gray days to stay.
Want to hear more poetry about birds? Check out our new hour-long special, Words in Flight. You can find it on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill.
Are you having difficulty with your eyesight? Are you losing your vision? Are you afraid of what comes next? If you're blind or visually impaired, contact Mass Commission for the Blind to find out if you're eligible to register for services. Learn new skills to reclaim your independence. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450.
Listen to Audio Journal on your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or, hey Google, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Would you like to hear news from Shrewsbury, Northborough, Southborough, and Westborough that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Tuesday at 4 p.m.